certain people out there who are pushing quite a negative narrative to calibration and saying that they are master calibrators because they can make a TV look so much better to filmmaker mode. You're not a master calibrator because you ain't calibrating to anything and you're just making it up as you go along, which is perfectly fine if that's what you want to do. But there are certain individuals out there who are doing that and then charging you money for that. No, it's not calibration. Hello and welcome to the AV Forums TV Display and Calibration Podcast for the 9th of September. And on this edition, I'm joined by Dr. Julian Scott. Hi, Jules.
Hi, Phil.
Just the two of us this week, but bit of a serious subject, really. I think it's time to get back on the education thrust a little bit and start talking about some calibration myths and truths. There's lots of misinformation out there at the minute regarding TVs, TV settings. What is TV calibration? A lot of people out there calling themselves master calibrators, yet they're not calibrating to any kind of standard. So they're making it up, basically. So we're gonna dispel some of these myths. We're going to tell you some truths about TV calibration and so on the podcast today. That is our purpose and our goal. If you want to watch the podcast, you can do that on our YouTube channel. It's AV Forums Podcasts is the channel that you need to subscribe to. That is different to the main AV Forums channel. So that's AV Forums Podcast channel. Go find that one and subscribe. You'll never miss a podcast. They all get published at 7 p.m. on a Monday on that channel. And again, if you enjoy our content, if you like a podcast, if you like the knowledge and everything else that we try to impart every week on the podcast, then why not tell your friends? Why not go post on some of your groups and forums and point people in this direction so they too can join in with our community here? And why should they do that? Well, we're one of the largest AV and hi-fi communities on the internet. AV Forums has been around since 2000. The editorial has been around since 2003. And I have been the site editor since then. So well over 20 years of experience there. I'm ISF, THX and PVA trained and qualified and classified and certified. A lot of people would say I'm certified. For the reviews, we do a lot of TV reviews. You'll see my face on most of the videos on AV Forums, as well as the podcast and so on. I've been around a little while. And Jules is on the podcast. And Jules, why don't you tell the listeners and viewers a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure, Phil. I joined AV Forums in 2003, I think it was, as an enthusiast. I became a certified THX calibrator in 2011. Then became a THX instructor and then with the PVA as well. And so I've been working in the residential install industry with calibration, also in post-production studios and in production itself, and also with calibrating displays for AV Forums users for many, many years. I've probably calibrated thousands of displays all told. And now, since 1st of August, I am now working for Habitech, which is a major UK distributor, as their cinema specialist.
Excellent. Well, that's the theme for today's podcast. So what are we talking about? We're talking about the truth of TV calibration. What is TV calibration? Why does it exist? Why it's important? What's not calibration? We're going to cover that as well. We're going to cover some of the misconceptions around the concept of calibration, why you would do it, why you need to be doing it, what filmmaker mode is, why that's important, why manufacturer cinema modes are important. And the other thing is tackling some of the things or some of the questions that we get regularly on our AV Forums YouTube channel and on AV Forums as well, as to, well, why should I calibrate? Because it's not as bright or as vivid mode or dynamic mode on my TV, and the motion's not as smooth and all the rest of it. So why would I go with a calibrated mode? And I think that's the important question that keeps getting asked time and time again, Jules, because manufacturers put these super resolution, super brightness. There's different modes that they put on their TVs, different marketing, and this is the thing, marketing features that are added, saying, oh, this TV will do 5,000 nits, or this TV has better sharpness or better brightness or better black levels and so on. There is a difference between marketing and then the image that you want at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's obviously manufacturers are in the business to make some money. So, to that extent, sometimes it's whatever will work. If making all TVs purple sold TVs, TV manufacturers would make all TVs purple. And we've seen what happens when manufacturers don't make enough money in this business in the past. We now have some, very old. If you're of a certain age, the certain brand names no longer produce TVs anymore. They're making mechanical diggers and things like that, So, at the end of the day, it is about companies making money for their shareholders, and that can sometimes be in conflict with questions of performance and accuracy. I don't mind, Phil. I don't mind TVs having all these, weird and wonderful modes in there, so long as there's an accurate mode I can go to, and one that I can adjust to be even more accurate than that is out of the box.
So, I mean, there's two reasons why these inaccurate modes exist. One is the marketing side. So, manufacturers, and there's lots of them out there that do push these different modes, like a sports mode or a games mode, and they pump up the brightness, they pump up the colors, they make it more vivid and more appealing, and so on. The other reason is that they want to sell the TV on a shop floor. And the way to grab attention on the shop floor, because of the way the human eye works, is to have the brightest, gariest, most colorful in your face image that draws your attention to their TV and not the competitor's TV. Because if everybody calibrated the TV the way it should be calibrated to the industry standards, and they were all put up in a line, and we've done this to AV Forum's members at different events over the years, and we have a line of calibrated TVs. Kind of difficult to tell the difference, because the whole point of calibration, Jules, is to make it look the way it should look. So they should all look the same, basically, or as close as possible to looking the same.
Yeah, exactly, Phil. If the calibration controls are functional, if they're not always functional. Remember the old Pioneer Kuros, do you remember? And the color management system not
Never touch
working
it.
properly. It had it. It was advertised and it had a color management system. So if you're buying a TV, you'd think, yeah, that ticks that box. It didn't work. And it could introduce artifacts. The LG OLEDs, when they first came out, had problems with the color management system. If you used it, it could cause issues. So yes, manufacturers will sometimes advertise something in the TV in order to sell it, and it just doesn't work. It's a me too system, what we call it, like that. But you're absolutely right about the shop floor. When you walk into any showroom and there's, let's say, 20 displays in front of you, which one are you going to walk up to? Which one are you going to notice? The manufacturers will put the display into a demonstration mode, which is deliberately very, very bright, very, very saturated, designed to catch your eye, like a bumblebee in a field of flowers. These TVs are competing with each other for your attention. And of course, the other thing is about shop floors is that the lighting conditions can be pretty awful, and they're certainly not reference, and it's not a kind of condition, an environment that you'd actually want to watch your TV in. So, of course, these modes are being designed to actually work effectively to catch your eye in those environments as well. So, there's a few things going on when you go into to buy your telly and you see these TVs in their particular display modes.
And I just want to clarify, when I say correct mode, what we're not saying is that we're not telling people how to set up their TVs. We're not saying to you, you must have your TV in a calibrated mode. You must do this, you must do that. Absolutely not. Do what you like with your product. If you want to have it in these other modes, that's perfectly fine. That's not a problem to us. But I think as AV Forum's members, enthusiasts, as professionals ourselves, as film fans, and as people who want to see the content in the best possible way, we are going to talk about calibration. That is going to be our preferred route. The other thing is, when it comes to testing TVs, the only way that you can actually test a TV properly is by calibrating it to a known set of standards. And then seeing how that TV performs or doesn't perform. You need that control point. If all you're doing is taking a TV out of the box, putting it on a TV stand, and leaving it in standard mode, you're not reviewing the TV, you're reviewing that TV engineer's perception of what an image should look like. You're not looking at the correct color of red or the correct color of blue or any of the colors in between. And this is why it's important as well, from an assessment point of view, and why I'm so involved with the calibration and everything else, because it gives me that control point. I can put any TV manufacturer's product up on the bench, and I know that if I calibrate it within a certain reference points within this envelope that everybody works in, everybody from TV sports departments to game developers to film producers, we all work within the same envelope of standards. And as long as the TV performs within that, then that then allows you to make assessment of that performance. Now, that doesn't account for Joe Bloggs going down or any member of the public going out and buying a TV. And we did the research. We did a Mori poll, I think it was 2011, 2012, where it was a telephone poll. We asked Mori to phone up 1,000 people at random and ask a question: what do you do with your TV when you take it out of the box? And nobody touched it. I think it was 90 something percent. I don't know off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure Stu will find that and bring it up and put it on screen. And I'll be proven to be wrong. But I think it was around about 90 something percent never touch the TV when they take it out of the box. They just put it up on whatever it is that they're going to put the TV up on and then leave it. And that's a shame because there's so much that that TV can give you other than the manufacturer's designated out of the box default mode. And of course, Jules, we're now in a an industry that has to toe the party line when it comes to EU regulations and other regulations in the US and so on about energy consumption and about different aspects of environmental issues, where that TV is going to ship in an eco mode, which means that the brightness is not going to be set up correctly. The screen's going to dim. It has a sensor in the TV somewhere, and it's going to dim that down so it's using the least amount of electricity possible, the least amount of power possible. The problem with that is that it robs the TV of its capabilities there. And of course, if you're seeing a TV in a showroom, it ain't in an eco mode either. It's in brightest, most vivid mode. So again, what we're saying to people is, we're not telling you how to watch your TV or how to set your TV up. If you're happy with your TV and your environment with the picture that you're getting, and you're not that bothered about seeing it as it's intended to be seen and so on, then yeah, we're there's nobody here hitting you over the head with a stick. But if you really want to get to the crux, to see the image that's supposed to be seen, then calibration is one of the ways to do it, Jules. The other is accuracy out of the box. And in the last 5 years, as someone who sees every TV or every mid-range to high-end TV that gets released, it's really improved out there. Manufacturers are taking it on board and understanding that creators' intent is really important. And many manufacturers like Panasonic and Sony and LG, they're actually involved in Hollywood and working with creators, or working with creators in Soho in London and other production facilities around the world. And they realize that that's how the content should be seen, and they allow us to have that in our TVs now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you remember years ago what it was like. I certainly remember what it was like in back in 2011 when I first started professionally calibrating, and the controls that were in displays, compared to what we have now, it's just chalk and cheese, isn't it? And you were lucky to get a moderately accurate mode back then. I mean, they were really quite bad, and thanks to AV forums and other platforms, manufacturers have been pushed to that. Of course, manufacturers don't do things just for the sake of doing it. It has to make commercial sense for them. The where we are now is thanks to, as I say, platforms like AV forums and review feedback and over the years. And now we do have the filmmaker mode in most displays. Not all manufacturers are on board yet. Hopefully they'll come. Not that they're, last year or a year or a year ago, that there weren't already more accurate modes in displays. The filmmaker mode picks up from that. It's if your TV's got a filmmaker mode, you know that if you go to that mode, it's as accurate as it gets, short of a professional calibration. And as you say, it has got scarily close to being completely accurate. It's not quite there, still not quite there. I think it's going to be difficult for them to account for the unit to unit variation on TVs, but it gets you, it gets you a very good performance out of the box. And if that's all you do, then you're going to enjoy a good picture. That's going to be a reasonably accurate display.
So we're going to tackle the first issue with filmmaker mode, and it's one of the questions that gets asked the most, or certainly the bit of feedback that we get on our YouTube channel or on AV forums, and that is, Phil, it's too dark for my room. And the reason for that, Jules, is that filmmaker mode done right is set for 100 nits. That is the industry standard in terms of watching in a dim room. Now, we don't live in grading suites. We live in living rooms. We have ambient lighting and so on. So, one of the first things that I want to get across is you don't have to stick with the panel brightness that's the default in filmmaker mode. If you stay in filmmaker mode, you can adjust the panel brightness without affecting the delta errors. So, without affecting the grayscale and the color gamut in any significant way, that's then going to make it inaccurate. It is going to move it a little bit away from the ultimate reference point that they're aiming for at 100 nits. But most modern TVs will do 200 nits quite easily in a living room, and you don't really need much more than 200 nits. Most LCD TVs, they don't go much higher, and most of the affordable LCD TVs don't go any higher than 250, 300 nits. In terms of overall brightness and overall screen brightness, OLEDs, the very best OLEDs out there can now do 250, 300 nits full screen brightness nowadays. So this conception that, or misconception that LCD and OLED were so far apart when it came to ambient light and so on, that's not the case anymore. And certainly hasn't been the case for a number of years. If you're talking about mid-range LCD TVs, even up into the higher echelons, the actual full screen brightness isn't that much more than OLED. If we're talking about viewing standard dynamic range content in a living room, Jules, and they put in filmmaker mode and it's a little bit darker to them, what we can do is we can look for the panel brightness adjustment. It's different manufacturers call it different things, but they tend to be round about the same in terms of the terminology and what they're calling it. You can adjust that up to what you think is then reasonable for in your room. You don't want to take it too high that it makes it overly bright, but just look at your surroundings around you and then adjust that brightness until you get to the point where you think there's a good match between the light that's in the room and that you can see what's going on the TV. The next bit of advice I'm going to give, and obviously Jules, you can jump in if you have anything to add to this, but then we're going to look for the gamma control. And we're going to watch a bit of content that's dark. And if you can't see what's happening in some of the darker reaches of the image, if it's what we call crushed, so none of the details in there, and you've got wide areas or large areas of black with gray, but no defined details in there, then go to the gamma control. And it probably will be set to 8 BT 1886 or 2.4 gamma. What we want to do is we want to brighten that up a little bit. And the simple way to do that is to take it down to 2.2 or 2.1, depending on how bright your room is. And then you will see some of that detail that was perhaps crushed because of your ambient lighting in the room. That starts to come back. And straight away, you have an accurate image, because the grayscale hasn't changed significantly in terms of you changing the gamma and the brightness, because you're not changing it in huge amounts. The color should still be accurate, or certainly under the human perceptual delta E of 3. And you've then got a much better image for your surroundings. So for those who immediately jump to filmmakers too dark, there are solutions, Jules.
Yeah, and we should always remember, Phil, that the 100 nits reference is for a grading studio, and that is based upon the distance from the screen of the colorist who's working on this. And remember, he's working on it 9 to 5, so there's also a bias light in that room, simply state it should be 5 nits, which is, a faint holy glow around your display. So there is a certain amount of light in the room already, and that's also to offset the strain on the colorist's eyes. Anybody sits in a dark room all day, as we calibrators often have to do. My eyes do get strained, so you have to be wary of that. And of course, a calibrator's best asset is his eyes or her eyes, so they need to look after it. In all likelihood, in your living room, you are not going to be sitting at the same reference distance from your screen. Most people, I would say, and I've calibrated for thousands of clients, are not sitting close enough to even see 4K. Which should be remembered. In a normal living room, you've bought a nice 4K TV, but you're not sitting at the distance that you can see the full panel resolution, which is an issue. And the other thing we know is that actually peak brightness varies, perception of it varies by distance as well. So, and also by screen size as well. So the larger screens versus a smaller screen, there is a difference in perception of brightness too. So as a calibrator, what you'll be looking at is the surroundings that you're in. What is the level of ambient light? And you're right, if there is a certain amount of it, you're going to change your gamma in order to reveal the shadow detail that is otherwise crushed by the ambient light in the room, because your eyes respond to the ambient light. So the more ambient light, the smaller your pupils will close, the less you'll be able to see shadow detail. What changing the gamma does is actually bring back that shadow detail so you can see it again. Usually these things won't have too much of a cost in terms of delta error, in terms of increased perception of error. There may be a tiny amount, but it's not significant.
And one thing I always say to people is, it's better introducing errors into an accurate starting point than going to standard mode or going to vivid mode where they are miles out to start with and everything looks overly blue to start with. You're better starting at an accurate point, assess what's around you, assess the brightness, the conditions that you're going to be watching in the TV, and then make these little adjustments to try and bring back what you may be missing because of the environment that you're in, because of the distance that you're sitting from the panel and so on. And it's interesting, and you're absolutely right in terms of resolution. It's why it's about number three or four on the list, actually. But the further you sit back, the less that resolution is going to impact on you and on your viewing. And we're finding that with 98-inch TVs and larger TVs and so on, that you're having to think a bit more about seating distance and are you actually seeing the resolution that you believe that you're seeing from your display and so on. And when you're getting down to a 55-inch TV and you're sitting 15 feet, 20 feet away from it, you're not getting 4K resolution, but that's only one part of the image. And of course we've got to take into account everything that's going on within that viewing environment. So this is why or certainly this is the answer to one of the most common questions that we get. Filmmaker mode is too dark. No, it's not. It just needs a little bit of adjustment to your viewing environment and so on. The next question, Jules, is that standard mode is so much more impactful and the colors are a lot nicer and brighter and more vivid and so on. So what's your response to the person that's making that comment?
My response is, having worked with colorists, with directors of photography, is that color is used to tell the story. You wouldn't, if you, unless you've been in those environments, you can't really appreciate the degree to which these people go in terms of dialing in the narrative of the movie via the use of color. So if you are distorting those colors, of course you can do, it's your TV, do what you like. But if you want to get the full story, then having an accurate color, putting the TV into an accurate color mode to start off with, if not also then getting it professionally calibrated, is going to you're going to get the story, and it may be subtle things. It may not be so wildly obvious to you, but the subtle color cues are really important. They're part of the narrative. And as I say, if you put into standard mode or vivid mode, it may on the surface be appealing, but you're not getting the story that the director is trying to tell you. And it's the same things like with the audio side of things, subtle audio cues. that you maybe entirely unconscious of. It may be completely subconscious, but the director is consciously using these things to tell to bring you into the movie, and to get you get to hear the narrative.
Good examples of that. A horror movie. A horror movie is 50% the sound, because without the sound, the build up to the scare or whatever, if there's no sound there, it loses that impact. You don't get that scare moment. You don't build up the tension, and that could be just something like a very subtle bass tone, like a heartbeat. That's very, very subtle, but it's there. Christopher Nolan, in terms of Dunkirk, there's a watch ticking all the way through that film. You're probably not conscious of it all the way through the film, but there is a clock ticking because he's messing with the timeline and he's jumping backwards and forwards in the timeline. But it's all building up to one moment in that film, and he's using the clock ticking, but he's also using very, very distinct color palettes in terms of what's future, what's now, where are we heading, where's the convergence point, and it all works towards that. Horror, red. Red is never used in a color palette unless it's blood or unless it's something to do with horror, because you'll notice it's all cyans and blues and very drab looking color palette in any horror movie. You look at all of them, they all go around certain areas where certain colors are not used because they're then used for effect. It's like Jaws, the shark's only there when the music's playing. Any other time, the shark's not actually there. And again, the use of color. Red is only used for blood. It's never, and of course, the old cliche, the Matrix.
Of course.
The real world is blue, the Matrix is green. If you mess with that, if you've messed with your TV, you're going to lose that subtlety that's there. You're going to lose what the director's trying to do, in terms of trying to tell the story and so on. Which is why film enthusiasts like us, we want to have our displays as accurate as possible. The other thing is, it's using the artistic intent, and I know people say, oh, that's so cliched, and oh, how pretentious of you to mention it, but it is an art. Film is an art. You have a director of photography, you have these people who spend lifetimes studying the use of color, the use of motion, the use of lighting, and lighting is really important, and this then impacts on what we're talking about is calibrators, what we're talking about is reviewers and everything else when it comes to HDR versus the marketing version of HDR. So the real perception of HDR is, if you look at the side of my face here, I've got a window right here. This is brighter than this side. Yeah, you can see detail, or you should be able to see detail all the way around, but you know that this is brighter, and that gives a three-dimensional look to the object that you're looking at. And the whole point of HDR is that you're moving from a restriction that was placed on playback. It's always been captured. If something was filmed on film, it was always captured in there in that wide dynamic range. You always had the 14 or 15 stops of dynamic range in 35 mil film. Actually, I think it's about 12 and a half to 13, if we're being, as accurate as possible in terms of 35 mil, 65, 70 mil. It was a much wider dynamic range. That's always been there. We're starting to see that now that we're working in an HDR world. Now that these films are going back, and you're able to lift that sheen, that veil off of this, because the equipment is now capable of showing that. So maybe, from somebody who works in a professional environment and has worked in a professional environment, Jules, maybe explain to the listener why we're moving from the CRT days, and even plasma and LCD to a certain extent had to follow certain display rules in terms of how the image was shown, in terms of why there's a gamma curve and so on, to where we are now, where actually you could have a linear gamma curve, and you do have a linear gamma curve, and you now have digital numbers that relate to brightness levels and so on, because we can dig so deep now into the image. So maybe give a brief overview from, the professional side as to why that's so important and why that adds to the realism of the image.
SDR, sorry, SDR is a standard. It goes back to the 30s, and to cathode ray tube technology, as do concepts such as gamma. In terms of gamma, what they found when they were transitioning away from CRT to different display technologies, when they tested them, they found that it was sorry, they found that they needed a method to translate accurately into the new world of LCD and plasma and OLED, what was just a native or natural CRT gamma response, a response to voltage in and light output. And so BT1886 evolved to that. So that we've talked about 1886 before. And in a perfect display, you'll get 2.4. 2.4 is with a display with a perfect black floor will have a 2.4 gamma on it. What they also have found, were found historically, was when they tested the gamma on the CRT tubes, it was not a linear response, was it? It was a very inefficient way. So you had these curve, a gamma curve. And what they made the what the, it came out of black very slowly and increased ramped up towards white, but it wasn't linear. If you gave the display 50% input, you didn't get 50% output. So they made the cameras do the opposite in order to give you an effective linear result. But it was all everything we watch in in SDR was all restricted by CRT technology, because that's what we began with, and everything was built upon that legacy platform. So they became a need in order to show things that are more true to life, to actually depart from that. So then we have HDR, high dynamic range, and you've used the analogy of your face perfectly there, Phil, because in SDR you probably wouldn't be able to capture that completely. For example, in a room, you might have a dark part of a room, and you also have a bright window with the light streaming through. With SDR, you can't show both at the same time. You can't show the set shadow detail in the room and the detail outside the window. You'd have to either clip the window and show the shadow detail, or vice versa. But with HDR, you've got much more of a dynamic range. So you can capture and show everything that we would see with our eyes more naturally. So there was a definite need in the industry to move from SDR to HDR, and the purpose is also with increasing brightness and increasing colors, like going from 709 as a color space through to Rec 2020, was to more accurately reflect the eyes that the colors that our eyes can see as well, including also more peak brightnesses. So CRT has been great. I mean, sorry, SDR technology based on CRT has been great for a long time. But there's been a need now to move, become more accurate to what our eyes are seeing. So that explains that shift. Why? More natural, more accurate to how we see the world.
I'll unmute myself.
You were
The
muted.
problem is that there's new misconceptions being brought in, usually because marketing's getting involved and wants to push big numbers and all the rest of it. But when it comes to grading film and looking at HDR productions in response to SDR and how the colorist is approaching that or the director of photography is approaching that, the only thing that's changed is this dynamic range. Is the steps of dynamic range. You're now talking about 14 steps that the cameras are capable of. If you're looking at a display, you could probably reach 11 if you were lucky, but it's much closer to what can be captured and what can be displayed in terms of dynamic range. That doesn't mean that the standards that were invented for SDR are now irrelevant. Those standards are still very much relevant because they haven't changed significantly by moving to HDR. And I think this is the big misconception. And it's a misconception as well because we now have all these fancy things on TVs like Super Resolution Plus or Super Brightness or Contrast Booster or Contrast Enhancer and all these marketing gimmicks that don't do anything but ruin the image and add what shouldn't be there into the image, HDR remaster and remaster an SDR image into HDR, and all it's doing is is bumping up saturation. These are marketing things, and they're totally and utterly useless if you want to go for an accurate image. Things haven't changed that much in terms of SDR to HDR. So the white point for SDR is D65 white jewels. The white point for HDR, including Dolby Vision and every other flavor of HDR, is
D65.
okay. So we haven't changed there.
No.
Your grayscale, you still have to have an accurate grayscale. That hasn't changed. In terms of gamma, that is where things have changed. But in all essence, you're still talking about a curve that exists there. It's not completely linear, because displays act in different ways, which is why you have tone mapping and why the displays, and that's getting a bit more technical. We'll come back to that. And then color, and color's changed very slightly. DCI is the specification that everybody is working to at the moment. There are very few production facilities or productions that work to BT 2020. And the reason for that is 2020 is so far off in terms of actual 2020, because of what you're talking about in terms of wavelength of color and so on. That's what's called future packing. So when they came up with the standard BT 2020, it was accepted that we weren't going to reach that for many decades, if at all, that we were actually going to get to that stage. But it was future-proofing, it was future packing, it was in there. So when technology then did make that leap, or things did, it was already accounted for within the specifications. But again, this is the envelope that we're talking about. So when we're talking about Rec 709, it's an envelope. We're talking about DCI, that's another envelope. You're talking about BT 2020, but everything happens within the wider envelope, and then everything scales down within that joules. So again, what we're talking about isn't a huge difference. So when people are coming on comment sections or watching some YouTubers who completely misunderstand the subject, yet because YouTube gives people platforms for information and so on, sometimes misinformation is out there. That standard's 50 years old, yeah, and it's still relevant. SDR standards are still relevant to the content that you're watching. The vast majority of the content you're watching is still made within that Rec 709 envelope. All the cameras that you watch at a football game, they have to look the same. They have to, camera one has to look the same as camera two and three and four. They achieve that through standards. They achieve that because those standards exist to make things look similar. And again, that comes all the way down the chain to your home TV. You shove it in filmmaker mode. Even though you're not watching a film, you're watching a sports broadcast. That sports broadcast was still created within that envelope. The content that you're watching there in that filmmaker mode is how it's intended to be seen. That is the color of the grass. It's not neon green. That is the color of the green that was in that venue. Those are the shadows and so on. What HDR does, and Jules will come in on this from a professional point of view as well, it gives the creator that little bit more leeway in terms of making the image look realistic. So as Jules said before, if you have a sunset and you have a character sitting with his back to the sun, that character in SDR, you either expose for him and see the detail and blow the sun out. So the sun's just a disc in the sky. There's no color saturations. There's nothing there other than this yellow blob, and that's it. And probably the sky is probably blown out as well. What HDR gives you is, or gives the creator, is the tools to make that character still as detailed as the director wants in terms of facial detail and so on. But then you've got clouds in the sky that were completely blown out, and you've got a sun that has a few different layers in terms of how intense that light is from the outer into the inner. It gives you more definition and so on. That's all you're talking about. That's a 4,000 nit, demonstration right there. That's one that I've seen a number of times in Hollywood now as to what the capabilities are of 4,000 nits. It's not about burning your retinas. It's not about this TV that's 5,000 nits. It's mega bright, and a complete misunderstanding of the technology there. That's why it exists. It's the car sitting under the sun and the chrome on this 1950s, Coupe de Ville or whatever. It's the chrome. It looks natural. It looks real. That's what high dynamic range is. It's not about burning your retinas.
No, an APL fill on HDR is much, much, much lower. That extra dynamic range is specifically for specular highlights. It's not about making the whole movie or TV program
Exactly.
4,000 nits, and there's a big misunderstanding there. It may be slightly brighter overall than your SDR picture, but I say the rest of that dynamic range is reserved for those specular highlights.
And it's not about the brightness, that if you show somebody the HDR version versus the SDR version, something, oh, look how much brighter it is and so on, and how much more detail it, but that more detail and so on, it's not in the specular highlights, it's in the areas where your eye is attuned, and that's in the mid-range and in the shadows, and it's being able to see more of that detail because you have from 0 to 100 nits or 200 nits, is you have so many more areas of dynamic range that you can bring out of the image. It's not about the specular highlights. It's not about the 2,000 nits or the 4,000 nit being on screen. And I've watched videos where people have had, these professional grade monitors, and they're like, "Oh, look, this bit's only just hitting 4,000 nits. So how can it possibly be a 4,000 nit master?" It's like, you're missing the point. You're completely and utterly missing the point of this technology. It's not about how bright, it's about all these other steps in between and how well that display can show that extra detail that's in the image. That's what makes an HDR image. And the specular highlights are the icing on the cake, but
And
not the be all and end
of
all.
course, Phil, just because some content is produced on a 4,000 nit master doesn't necessarily mean that the content creator is going to use all 4,000 nits in any
Exactly.
one point. So you might have the brightest pixel in that film or TV program, maybe way lower than that. It depends upon the artistic intent. Once you've had your display properly calibrated, yes, you can go all the way up to 4,000. It's accurately if necessary, but it depends on the artistic intent. We keep saying that, don't we? Keep saying artistic intent, director's intent, because at the end of the day, as we've said before, also this is an art form, and what we do to calibrate, yes, it's scientific. We use generators, use colorimeters, spectrophotometers, etc. But this is science in the service of art. It's an art form at the end of the day. And if you go into, as I do, on forums with colorists and content creators and work with these people, that's what they're talking about. They'll put up grades for other people to comment about. Look how I used color in this scene. Look how I used the specular highlight in this scene to demonstrate and to tell the story. So it really is. It's still storytelling, and which is why getting an accurate display is accurate and I would is important. And I'd say to that also, Phil, that when you're in a grading studio, yes, you've got your 4,000 nit monitor. Not so many actually; they mainly tend to be 1,000 nits. But you've also got your client display, because the creative team can't gather round a 25-inch monitor, so they'll have a client display, which is usually a consumer display of the types that our AV forums. Readers are putting in their own homes, like a 77-inch, LG or Panasonic or whatever, and those will also be calibrated as well. And the team will sit down and they'll review the content. And of course, one of the challenges is to match that display to the grading monitor. And obviously, you can't necessarily do that perfectly if you've got 4,000-nit grading monitor and 1,000 nits on your client display, but it is very representative. Of what they're going to get from that kind of display. And we never put it into vivid mode. We never put it into standard mode. It's never put into any of those modes. It's always in, we calibrate in the most accurate mode out of the box, which is often filmmaker, if not some other mode like movie mode or ISF night. And we work from there onwards. But never is there a client monitor set up in a grading studio in vivid, standard, or any of those other modes.
And this is kind of brings us round to the point that we're trying to make here. All these comments on threads and all the rest of it, and I know why people make them, and I know what the misconceptions are out there and the misunderstandings. And at the end of the day, if you want to have your TV set up that way, nobody's actually stopping you. If you think Your TV should have Ambilight dancing around, and it should be in vivid mode or whatever. That is the choice that you make, and nobody here at AV Forums would hit you over the head with a stick about that. That is your choice at the end of the day. But if you want to watch the content as it was mastered, as it was intended to be seen, and these professionals, they put a lot of effort in. I've been very, very lucky to go to a lot of these facilities. Jules has worked in these facilities. You see the dedication, the artistry that goes on. You want to see that at home. You want to be able to watch the content as it was intended to be seen. And it's not mega bright and so on. So then the next question, Jules, is, well, why would I spend more than 500 quid on a TV if, they can all be calibrated to look the same? Why would I have a £4,000 TV and not a £1,000 TV and so on? That is the question that then gets asked. Why am I reviewing this flagship TV that has all these mega contrast boosting features and MLA technology and all the rest of it? Why am I not watching it and reviewing it in vivid mode? It's all about headroom. It's all about that little bit extra that can be added to the display to add on to what it can do in terms of accuracy. So, an MLA panel, a micro lens array panel, adds that little bit more brightness. Which actually helps more in what we're talking about in terms of the mid-tones and the black levels and bringing out that detail. And I said that to an LG engineer, and he said, "Thank God somebody gets it. We're not talking about, 4,000 nits, 2,000 nits. That again, it's specular highlight. It's a tiny, sometimes a pixel level of brightness to add realism to the image. It's not about this overall brightness on screen." So again, that's why I calibrate every TV. It's on a level playing field. You can then see this extra headroom by watching the content on it because the TV is capable of more. It doesn't need to be in the vivid mode. It doesn't need to be in standard mode or so on. Those are irrelevant. They look nothing like the content that was filmed. And it comes down your TV aerial. It's all done within these envelopes. It's all supposed to look exactly as it should to the standard. So personal preference gets in the way of that, and that's why these comments come up, and people are quite entitled to their preference. But don't diss or don't be negative on those of us who are pushing for accuracy, for pushing to see the content as it was intended to be seen. These standards are 30 years old, yeah, but the standards, they exist, and everybody works to those standards. Look at the audio industry. And it's no standards. Every recording studio is different. Every mixing desk is different. We'll add a different sound to things. We'll add, and the that's artistry, but it's artistry that can't then be reproduced in the artist's intent, can't be reproduced when it comes to music, unless you're listening on that mixing desk in that environment. Whereas when we're talking about image, we're talking about video signals, when we're talking about, standards, Jules, we can recreate what that professional in that studio in Culver City or Skywalker Ranch or whatever they were looking at, we can see if we then calibrate to those standards and get within that performance envelope. It's why when you have digital artists working on a film like Avatar, and they work remotely and all over the world. Because you'll have one company working on one part and one company will be working on another part of that scene, and you'll have the digital artists working on a different character that also appears in that scene. Yet it all color matches, and it all color matches because they're all working to the same standards. All the displays are calibrated, so that blue is the same on that display to that display to this display to that, and that is the whole point.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. So you just said it for me. I was going to use Avatar as well. But yeah, I mean, these are, that there are independent colorists who'll be doing jobs on a single feature, but a lot of these large features are using multiple studios. The only way to make sure you've not got a dog's dinner at the end of it is to make sure there's a standard. They don't necessarily have to use the same monitor from studio to studio, but so long as the monitors are calibrated to that standard, you will get a uniform output from those studios, and that's really, really important. And of course, if you want to see everything as we've been banging on about that the content creators wanted you to see, to see the whole story, the narrative of the colors, then having your display in a most accurate mode, if you want to professionally calibrate it, always advocate for that, then you're going to get the you're going to see that on your own display as well. And that for me as a film buff ultimately is the great joy. And then you and I, we can talk about, what did Nolan mean when he was changing the color timing in this scene or that scene. And you're not losing it, you're not saying that, oh, if only Schindler's List was in color. Schindler's List can be in HDR with a Rec 2020 in a Rec 2020 color space, and it will still be black and white.
But again, it's look at the detail, look at the image, look at the artistry, and it's a black and white. But
Exactly.
that's what makes up your image. Now, if you're coming back to the fundamentals of what makes up an image and image fidelity and so on, it's the grayscale, it's the black, the white, and then you add the color on top. So we're going for full circle on that one. And I want to bring this back full circle as well. What does calibration mean? It doesn't mean personal preference. It doesn't mean, well, I think George Lucas got this wrong and I'm going to make this scene look like this and I calibrated my TV to get. What did you calibrate to? You have to calibrate to a standard. Standards exist. And the word calibrate means that you then calibrate to that system. So
Exactly.
that doesn't just that mean video, that means anything. Anything that says there is standards here. So photography it has to be this standard and you calibrate your device to that standard. That's what calibration is. If you're saying to me, I set up my TV and I calibrated the color to what I like, that's personal preference. That's setting up a TV. That is not calibration. You're not calibrating to any standard, which is why I then have issues with certain people out there who are pushing quite a negative narrative to calibration and saying that they are master calibrators because they can make a TV look so much better to filmmaker mode. You're not a master calibrator because you ain't calibrating to anything. If anything, you're giving people your preferred settings for that scene, which means nothing to how that content was created. It certainly means nothing to what is intended to be within that image. And you're just making it up as you go along, which is perfectly fine if that's what you want to do. But there are certain individuals out there who are doing that and then charging you money for that. That is not calibration. If you want your display calibrated properly, if you want to see the image as it was intended to be seen, as it was filmed, as it was created, and your TV is capable of that, then please hire a calibrator who is trained and certified. There are industry bodies out there. These people have to go and sit courses. They have to be trained in terms of what image science is, why it's important, why it exists, everything that we've just discussed in this last hour of the podcast, and more on top in terms of how displays work. How your interaction with certain controls on a display will interact with other controls on the display, and what you need to do to make sure that what you're doing to the display is correct and is towards the standards. It involves equipment that costs many thousands of pounds, many thousands of dollars. There is a reason for that. That equipment needs to be accurate. If it's a £700 meter or a $700 meter, it will only get so far in terms of image accuracy. It can be a useful tool for enthusiasts to get their TVs a little bit closer, a little bit more accurate. If it's a professional calibrator and they're turning up with a meter that costs a couple hundred quid or $700, I'd be questioning their methodology and so on. So there are trade bodies out there. There's the ISF, Images Science Foundation. There used to be THX. I believe THX are coming back in some capacity in terms of training the industry. There are industry bodies. There is the PVA, which Jules is a member of, and also instructs on a lot of the PVA courses. So very quickly, what does the PVA do, Jules?
We train calibrators, Professional View Alliance. Many of our students are colorists. They work in the professional world. And it's great when they rub shoulders against people whose intention is to calibrate in people's homes. And I think that's part of the education that a lot of people in residential are missing. They miss that because they don't have a knowledge of what goes on in post-production studios, then there can be the tendency towards creating your own standards, calling calibration something else. But if you rightly said, it's adjusting to a known or set standard. So we train calibrators to deliver displays to those known or set standards using the appropriate equipment.
Yeah. And what we're talking about here is an industry that is huge. You know, you have huge trade bodies on top of, you know, these are just calibration, you know, bodies that you can make sure that your calibrator has done the training. Because at the end of it, they have to pass an exam. They also then have to keep up with the knowledge base. I know that Greg at the PVA is very hot on making sure that people stay up to date with the latest things. They can also reset and recut. Certify themselves
Recertify,
and
yep.
recertify and so on. And you know, if you're going to go and hire somebody, make sure they are at least trained by one of these organizations and they have some experience. Because again, you can go to the training, you can pass the training, as Jules says. But again, the other flip of the coin is experience. And it's only being able to experience all the different displays out there and how their different methodology in terms of controls and everything else works. That's where you get the experience on the back of that. So not only have they got the knowledge base in terms of, you know, what makes up an image and why things what should work a certain way, but they also have the knowledge and the experience. So find yourself a good calibrator. Don't give away money to YouTubers who are giving you personal preference settings, because it's just a waste of your time and your money. If you want to get your TV looking as perfect as possible, then my suggestion would be to go and hire somebody that is a professional calibrator, or use filmmaker mode and make some adjustments for your environment. If that's a little bit too rich for you in terms of, and you know, things are tight for people out there. So filmmaker mode is a mode that's designed to get you as close as possible, and then you can make some adjustments on top of that. But at the end of the day, if you want to see things as it's intended to be seen, if you want to get the very best out of your display, whether it's a £4,000 display or a £400 display, calibration will get the best out of it. Because another thing that we haven't quite touched on at Jules, and again, I don't want this to be end up to being a 2-hour podcast, but setting the display up properly can mitigate quite a few issues in terms of source content as well, and other things. So I'm thinking like vivid mode or standard mode, and then you're watching, you know, an HD channel on a 4K TV or SD channel, God forbid you want to go that route. There are things where if the set is calibrated properly, it gets around a lot of issues that these other modes will have motion smoothing switched on. They'll have soap opera effect. They'll be over bright in certain areas, which will highlight encoding issues and compression issues and all the rest of it. Yet a display that's set up correctly in a properly calibrated, a lot of that is built into that calibration, so motion will be correct. There won't be any motion smoothing. You'll see things that it's supposed to see, and artifacts that might be amplified by brighter, more vivid modes are actually better contained. So you get a better image from your display, even though it's a lower bit rate or more heavily compressed. It's not as in your face.
Yeah, and we should say that it's not just the display. There is a whole video system involved here too.
Oh God, he's mentioned it. We're gonna have to be here for another hour.
Oh God. Well, if you just buy settings for a television, first of all, those settings are never going to be completely accurate to your display because there is panel to panel variation, which is why even filmmaker mode still has some degree of inaccuracy compared to professional calibration. It may be a lot smaller than it used to be, which is, kudos to the manufacturers for closing that gap. But there is this inevitable, unit to unit variation there. But your whole video chain matters, as also does your room. If you're projecting, the colors, the decor in your room makes a massive difference in terms of projection. You can't buy settings that can actually offset that. So the idea of buying settings in the first place or reusing settings for me is flawed. But and also are all these other variables that you need to take that a professional calibrator will take into account. The ambience of the room, et cetera, et cetera. So, and you can only do that being on site. And sometimes when you're actually, you've calibrated your display and you're playing back your reference content, which is always the final stage of a calibration. You play back reference content, by which we mean content you know, because you refer to it every single day of the year. And you play that content, you think, God, that's not what I was expecting. Then that you dive down into the sources, to the AVR, to the Blu-ray player, to all the other devices that may be in the chain, to dig out why is this not looking correct, because it ought to. And then only when you fix that, then can you consider the system properly calibrated. It's not just the display, is it, Phil?
No, absolutely not. And again, without turning it into a 2 hour podcast, these are issues that we talk about actually on a monthly basis. The room is the most important aspect of any system, whether it's audio or video. Your source chain is very, very important. Once the display is calibrated, you then have to work back through the chain and make sure that, like Joe says, everything else works the way you're expecting it to, and so on. And again, that can be even more complicated if you add a video processor in there, Jules. It adds a complication, but then you can actually add a little bit more performance in there, because if you're adding a video processor, you can do, 3D lap calibrations and all sorts, and you can get really, really accurate when you start doing things. But again, these are conversations, I think, for another day. If we're getting back to the consumer getting the TV out of the box, if there's one thing that consumer does to improve their performance of their TV, is to put it into the correct picture mode. It's only one setting, you just have to do it once. The only other thing I'm going to add to this conversation before we wrap up is that it used to be just one setting. It's now two settings, thanks to EU directives and everything else. The first thing you should always do when you get a new TV is get it out of eco mode. Go into the usually general menu, find the energy settings, and make sure it's not switched to eco mode. Or on a Samsung TV, there's a brightness override. Make sure that's set to off. So make sure you set that, and then stick it into filmmaker mode or movie mode, and so on. But you can really deep dive into this subject. There's lots of information out there. Of course, there's AV forums. Go over to AV forums. Look up video calibration. Look at all the guides we got there, including Picture Perfect, which is a campaign that was done in 2012 by ourselves. We intend to update that and refresh that. But actually, there's not a lot that needs to be updated, because what we tell you in that is still actually pretty relevant today in terms of your video chain and your room and making sure you put your TV into the correct picture mode. But hopefully, we've dispelled some of the myths out there. We are here as purveyors of good and accurate and factual information. We're not asking you to buy anything. I'm not selling you video calibration courses or anything like that. We're here to, at the end of the day, give the community good information and give back to the community. And hopefully, we've answered a lot of questions. We've dispelled some of the myths out there. But if you do have questions, head over to AV Forums. And if you at Jules or you at myself in the comment section, if we have time, we will obviously pop in there and try and answer some of your questions there as well. But before we wrap up for today, we've got competition and supporters, Jules. So maybe we can rattle through the competitions here. I believe there's a pretty good projector for on offer.
You can win an LG Cinebeam Q projector worth £1,000. It's a compact and portable 4K projector with wireless connectivity for streaming, movie gaming, watching, and gaming wherever you want. I'm staying in a hotel down here, so it'd be quite nice to have a portable projector just to get out and put some stuff onto the wall. The closing date is 11:59 p.m., Tuesday, 15th of October, 2024. All competitions are eligible to open to eligible AV Forums members over 18 and who are residents of the UK. So head over to avforums.com/competitions to enter. So that's everybody but Phil.
Yep, that's right. And of course, there's also disc competitions there. So if you're feeling retro, you can win some DVDs. There's also Blu-rays and 4K discs available for patrons and standard AV Forums members to win. Again, it's the same address that Jules just gave you there, and that's open to everybody bar myself. And then we've got some previous winners.
Stevio67 won the Denon AVR X1800H AVR worth £699. That's £699, not £6.99. Courtesy of Peter Tyson. BHXTC won a pair of QAQ6M40 powered micro tower speakers and QED digital cables worth £1,069. And Badger Stuter won a copy of Chinatown on 50th Anniversary Collector's Edition 4K Ultra HD worth £40.
Some cracking prizes there. Well done, guys, on your competition wins. We've got some new patrons to mention, Jules.
Yep, J.A. Kamal, Sauerkraut, Cloud Atlas, Ewan Innes, and Les Hewitt.
Thank you, guys. Your support really is appreciated. You help us continue to produce all this content and bought us a coffee, tea, and Paul Haggard. They bought us three coffees each. So thank you very much for your generosity there. It really is appreciated. My thanks, as always, to Jules. Thank you very much, Jules, for your input today. It is appreciated.
Cheers, Phil.
Our next episode is the Home AV edition. That is on Monday, the 16th of September. So stay tuned for that one. The guys will be back to talk about building your home AV room. So whether that's your living room, your studio room, it could be a den, whatever it is, or a luxury home theatre. We'll be discussing all the ins and outs of that as always. So that's 7 p.m. On Monday, the 16th September, on the AV Forums podcast YouTube channel. So go and subscribe to that. It's also available via other podcast providers as an audio-only version. Like I say, we're here every Monday, so stay tuned. And of course, if you want to buy us a coffee, you can buymeacoffee.com/AV Forums. If you want to become a patron, the details are in the description below. It really is appreciated, all your support. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching, hopefully on a calibrated display, and listening. And we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.